Merkel Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
In uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic, Rockfin, Odyssey, or YouTube, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. The new book is out, Hypocrisy, Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards. Oh boy, I'll tell you what, don't let the cartoonish cover fool you, because it might look nice and sweet on the outside, but I start kicking people in the teeth on the insides. If you're interested in the book, you can get the digital version of it in EPUB and PDF format from me at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. All you have to do is donate $10 through PayPal. There's a PayPal link there. If you do that, I'll send you the new book. If you donate $15 or more, I'll send you the new book plus the first book, The Octopus of Global Control, in digital format as well. If you want the paperbacks, you're going to have to go to Amazon and do it that way, because they're the ones that print the book. But it's wild, I'm telling you. You might want to check it out. Well, let's see. This is normally the time when I talk about our amazing sponsors and all of the great things that they've done for us. And of course, I love our sponsors. We wouldn't be here without them, but we've got a new one. Welcome to the show, my friend, the host of the Wise Wolf Gold and Crypto Show, and also the co-host of America Unplugged with our good friend, Billy Ray Valentine. That is Tony Arterburn. What's going on, Tony? How are you? Good to see you again.
Great to be here, Charlie. What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
I mean, that's designed for Tony Merkel, who engineers the show and helped me get it started. But it's appropriate for you too, because the goddamn line here is that we are being run by morons in this country, and there's a few of us out there that have recognized it, and we're sounding the alarm. You've been doing this for a long, long time. How'd you even get started? You've been doing radio. You've been doing InfoWars, hosting for David Knight. You've been doing it all. So I'm curious. Let's just start with this. I want to know how you got navigated through this insanity. You go through the military. You come out. You've got all these experiences, and you've got a voice. And then you find your voice. How did this all work?
I always wanted to be in radio since I was a little kid, and I got to see up close and personal in the 1990s because my dad was an entrepreneur, and he owned a bank and convenience stores, and he built up, I mean, really from the ground up. I'll talk a little bit about his story too as we proceed and talk about fiat currency, but he exposed me to a lot of the you know, the roots of American history, the Constitution, free markets, Adam Smith. I remember going to see Bo Greitz speak. If you know who Bo Greitz is, the most highly decorated Green Beret in Vietnam. They based, at least partly based, the movie Rambo off of him. And he was a leader in the alternative, what you would call like the old right, friends with Alex Jones back in the 90s. So I got exposed to a lot of the, not just the rhetoric, but the idea that something was wrong with our system. And I believed in America. I still do. Like, I believe in the people. But back then, I really wanted to be a soldier. I think I joined in 99 in the U.S. Army. I always wanted to, you know, work at Fort Bragg, work with the special forces. I went to be a paratrooper, went to Fort Benning, got my paratrooper wings. And all through that time, you have 9/11 that kicks off. And then we're the first Army company on the ground in Kandahar, Afghanistan, actually leapfrogged the 101st. And you get your debriefing by General Mattis, you know, who later became Secretary of Defense. That's who's like, you know, right in front of us telling us what's going on. And so living through that history, and then, of course, was part of the tail end of the invasion of Iraq. And that really changed me. I read a lot of history, but I also was exposed to some not so mainline thinkers that helped me through my early 20s. That's I talk about that a lot on my show. It's like a pivotal moment where I got the book The Death of the West by Patrick J. Buchanan. And if you know anything about Buchanan, he's very old school paleo conservative. You know, those type of people are generally anti-war. You know, the anti-free trade, they want borders, language, you know, tradition. That's really the school of thought that I came out of. But at the time, you know, the conservative movement completely hijacked by the neocons, which are Trotskyite Marxists, and I had really no place. So years later, after being involved in business, having a convenience store or two, being in real estate, I decided to run for Congress. And it was like the worst possible time I could have done it. But I decided that the ideas that I cared about and the values that I wanted to, you know, to talk to people about were just too important. So I ran for Congress in 2013 and 14 in North Texas. And I decided at the time, I said, why don't we just get a radio show? And so I went down to one of the big radio stations in Dallas, 570 KLIF. It's one of the really old news stations, but it had, you know, hosts on there like Michael Savage, Glenn Beck was on there at the time. And so I jumped in and got a Saturday night show and just went in, you know, with both feet and learned a great, especially running for office, like how the sauce is just made, how corrupt the party system is. I actually got to be really good friends with the sitting congressman. He was the last World War II veteran in Congress. His name was Ralph Hall. He was really good friends with Ron Paul. And so he used to be a Democrat, but he came from like, you know, the era of like handshake politics, like meeting people. He didn't spend a lot of money. He was actually an old political genius, friends with LBJ and all these. So we would talk for hours. And he was defeated by John Radcliffe, which if you remember that name, that was the former director of National Intelligence. DNI. Right, he was the DNI. John Radcliffe. They would send me to speak for the congressman when he was in his last election against John Radcliffe. Okay. So John Radcliffe knows. I'm like, you know, and I was thinking, you're the director of National Intelligence. Hey, he doesn't like me. So that's fun. That's a funny story to kind of have in your cap, you know, for dinner conversation. Like, you know, the new. Yeah, exactly.
I think we would all consider that to be a bright spot on your resume for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because those kind, they're like mannequin type figures. Like he was law partners with John Ashcroft.
Oh, geez.
And so like these are the I know these players back then. I hadn't quite made the transition of where I am now. You know, I was skeptical about 9/11. I talked about the JFK assassination. I was by no means like straight line conservative, you know, bland milquetoast talk radio. But I really made the transition later around 2018. I restarted my show. And it has been, I can't believe I'm still on that station in San Antonio where I restarted my show. I call it the Arterburn Radio Transmission. I wanted to have a name, like I wanted to do something. Everybody has a show or a report. And so I was like, what's a radio transmission? So it's ART. And that's just that's a hobby, you know, I do a couple of times a week. And I'm on Bill Cooper's old home station, WWCR.
No, that's, yeah, that's cool.
I read his biography and several times, and it's called Pale Horse Rider. Great, great book by Mark Jacobson. And I kept talking about WWCR. So I just said, they're shortwave. They go around the world. It's like 100,000 watts. And like, so I get people calling me from Chile, from Ecuador, from Africa. People reach out like because they hear my voice, you know. So I'm on a couple of times a week. So that's a lot of fun. And so really just about, you know, love of the game. You know, you're never going to, like, I knew a long time ago that as I abandoned the mainline talking points for conservatism, that I would be shunned, especially after I helped my friend Ralph Hall. He passed away in 2018. But, you know, the new order did not like anybody who helped the old order. And so politics was a dead end road for me at that point, too. So I just decided, let's go feet first into the realm of the things I'm interested in, because I probably, a lot like you, I got to the alternative media by research, by actual work, you know, not just because it's a hunch, but really looking into the details. And what did I say the other day? Like, conspiracy theory is just history with common sense in it, you know, because that's what I would always find difficult. You know, I would read like the great works like Will Durant, you know, like the Story of Civilization I have here on behind me on my bookshelf. I read that in Iraq, or a great many big pieces of it, and biography and everything. And history just made no sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what are the issues behind these great, you know, times in history, these big movements? What's really behind that? And I think that's where, like, you know, The Octopus of Global Control, which is a great book, by the way.
Thank you.
That's one, like, if you want to order your mind and get some, and make some sense out of like the complexities of the stuff that we talk about, I highly recommend that book.
Thanks.
I've recommended it to friends. Congratulations on that. Great. And I love the controlled demolition of the American Empire with you and Berwick. That, yeah. I haven't got the new book yet. When's that come out?
It's out now. I just as of the recording of this, it's scheduled to be put on Amazon, but we're recording this a little in advance, so by the time people hear it will already be out. But your digital copy will be sent to you in about 2 minutes after we're done with this interview.
Okay, awesome. Well, I'll trade you some Wise Wolf gold and silver merch, and I've got some things to send you anyway.
Awesome.
So that'll be a great good trade. Awesome. Yeah, just love the books. And I think, you know, as researchers, we do this because we love, you know, to help people get them exposed to the truth, or what we perceive as the truth, right, to the best of our ability. And it's a labor of love. And that's why, you know, being on your podcast is a great honor. I've been a listener a long time.
Thank you.
So like when I say, when I, that's the Winnebago man at the beginning, isn't it?
That's Winnebago man. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just, whenever I would hear, first time I heard your podcast, and I said, this is a great intro. As somebody who, you know, I'm off grid. I live on 33 acres. Didn't do that on purpose.
33 acres, Tony. Are you sure?
I love your numerology shows. and so, yeah, I live off grid, and we rainwater, a little bit of solar.
So you're going to live through the apocalypse. We won't.
Well, not really though, Charlie, because, you know, I go and I tell the earth, you know, hey, this is what I think about our corrupt government and these Luciferians that run everything. And, you know, I sponsor my show with an actual business. I'm actually in my office right now, and you can just come to my shop. It's open. There's a big sign that says We Buy Gold. So I'm pretty stupid in the realm of like trying to stay alive through the whatever, the apocalypse, the end of time, because I'm telling everybody where I am. But that's my job, you know. And I don't think I could just hide and shrink away, especially when you know, I have some ability to broadcast. Okay, I'm working on it. I think if you have the ability and you have the information, then you got to get out and you got to talk about it. So,
well, when you were in Afghanistan or in Iraq, knowing what you know about history and having these questions about, I mean, you had to know that you were clearly a part of history, like history in the making. And did it occur to you that like what we're doing right now may be totally twisted in the history books and have it and be told in a totally different way than what we're actually living through? Or did you feel like, oh, what we're doing will be recorded accurately and will be, you know?
So the Afghanistan and Iraq are completely different for me and how I perceive them. This is like the evolution of Tony. As I was always honored to be a part of the warrior class, mm-hmm. but even while I was serving, I got to be kind of like a Smedley Butler type, where I'm like, why are we doing this again? What's the security advantage to the? Because when I got to Fort Bragg in 2000 as a young paratrooper, I immediately volunteered to go to Kosovo. That was, you know, Mr. Clinton's war. We bombed Serbia for like 78 days. I mean, you couldn't get the average American to even know what I'm talking about when I was talking about bombing Serbia or why we were there. But we were there, right, for all sorts of nefarious reasons. And we stole, you know, Kosovo is like what Jerusalem is to the Jews, to the Serbs, you know, like we just basically wrested it away from them. Yeah. And that's another podcast, but I didn't know that then. But after my first tour in Kosovo and then getting back stateside, I was a world champion powerlifter, you know, through my teens and then early 20s. I competed in high school, and the Army said, my colonel that I went to work for said, you need to go lift again. We'll sponsor you. You know, just go out and lift for the Army. And so I ended up winning the national championship that year and got put on the American team to go to Sofia, Bulgaria for the world championship. So I'm representing the United States. I'm representing the Army. And special circumstances, because I had my colonel, David Bradley, was an amazing man, still is. And 9/11 happens. I mean, I got there on September 10th, 2001. So when 9/11 takes place, the next day, I'm already, you know, I'm in communication with my unit, and they're like, we're going to the Pentagon. They got deployed like right away. So if you look in like the movies, you know, the 503rd MP Battalion, that's what I was part of at Fort Bragg. They usually go to D.C. for anything like security reasons or riots or big protests. And so they dispatched my unit to the Pentagon, and I was put into another. That's like fate, as fate would have it. I got put into the unit that became, you know, the tip of the spear for the regular Army into Afghanistan. Whoa. And at the time, and I've talked about this on other podcasts about 9/11, you know, it's 21, you know, going into 22, we landed like, right. I think I got there like New Year's Eve, on 2001. So really, really fresh from, you know, the whole, era of 9/11 and post 9/11 stuff. And so, as we were landing, this was something that occurred to me, is we're corkscrew landing. And I've explained this before, like we didn't know what was on the ground. So this is an interesting like compartmentalization of everything that was happening on like certain parts of the intel community. As we know, as we talk about the inside outside job of 9/11, mm-hmm. certain people knew exactly what was going on. But like the people I was working with, even in the intelligence community and military intelligence, FBI was there. They were still looking for Osama bin Laden. They believed he was there. They believed he had networks. They believed, so that was the story, right? But right. even then, as we were corkscrew landing in, because you can't come from a traditional landing route, because we didn't know if anybody had, you know, surface to air missiles or the Stingers that we gave them.
I was just going to say, you know, right? They have our weapons that we
right, that we were in Afghanistan. Do that they first had them. Yeah. And then so we get to the Kandahar airport, and I remember thinking, okay, so four planes take off from inside the continental United States by people that we supposedly let in the country. Mm-hmm. And they strike targets in the, well, we can argue the Pentagon, but they strike targets in the United States, right? So that's mm-hmm. the way the story goes. But, and they're, you know, and I knew at the time they were Arab. Mm-hmm. These were Saudis, Egyptian. And I'm in, and I kept asking, why am I in Afghanistan? So that was like one of the first like moments of clarity where I start to question like the entire logic of invading Afghanistan. And we all on the ground, we agreed like, hey, we can only do so much here. you know, like once you've knocked out the Taliban, I'll have to send you a pictures. I'm like standing behind stacks of weapons that are the size of buildings, like where they have turned in their weapons. Like the Taliban just was gone. And I thought, what else can you do here? Well, it turns out you can do 20 years of absolute lies and, you know, all the backstabbing that the leaders did to our troops and to the American people and to the Afghan people, all of that. So it's an absolute tragedy and a crime. But back then, you know, it was just like, we got to find who's doing this. Well, as you know, being a part of the of an airborne unit at Fort Bragg, I mean, you're not going to have much time off in a global war on terror, you know, as George Bush would say. Mm-hmm. So I got back home, and guess what? We're going to Iraq, right? And that's when that's the lead up to Iraq. You know, Saddam starts doing these, you know, live video feeds of him chopping up his missiles. Remember the Chinese worm missiles? Like he was like, "I'll comply." He was at least doing like Hans Blix was coming in.
Right.
And this is how, you know, you can be, even with somebody as a combat vet at 22, I was still a little naive, like maybe they will stop this. Like maybe that will, you know, we won't have to do this. And I'll never forget like the night, you know, it was like March 18th. And they, you know, gave Saddam like what they give him 24 hours to turn him and his sons in. And I thought, oh, they're going to kick this off. And sure enough, and then the orders come down. But I totally oppose going into Iraq from the get-go. And obviously, I'm going to go. You know, I can't leave my team members behind. But anybody that knew me then would absolutely vouch for this. Like I was adamant. I remember my dad flew out and you probably won't mind I tell this story, but we lost it. One of my really good friends died. He's actually my best friend in the army, died from injuries or an infection that he sustained in Afghanistan when we were there. Mm-hmm. And so we had everybody, you know, get together and this was part of the funeral. And Afghanistan or Iraq's about to kick off. And I remember telling my dad, I'm like, I just oppose this. And this is just, and you know, we were got into a shouting match over it because, you know, this everybody was thinking, this is the era of freedom fries, Charlie. Remember this?
Yeah.
And the French don't support us. And Saddam's got a death ray and we got to get over there, you know? Right. And it's like, I kept saying, what is the end game here? You know, and I'm like, what are we going to do? Iraq has nothing to do with 9/11. What is this muddled, you know, connection and this yellow cake and all this stuff? Well, we know now, I mean, just masterful lies and media complicity. And that's how we got the global war on terror, because there really wasn't any sort of resistance to it. But I look back on that time and I was I'll never forget rolling in from Kuwait to Iraq, and I turned to my driver and I said, this is a really bad idea. Like what we're doing is historic. I knew historically the things that I was part of were, you know, and you hear the footage if you ever look at what happened to Saddam's sons Uday and Qusay. Mm-hmm. I was there for that. I mean, I drove right by that house, and they had General Petraeus was directing the 101. You know, they were getting gunfire from the house, and we pulled into the gate, and I could hear what they were doing. They shot 16 TOW missiles into that house.
Whoa.
And they pulled them out in pieces.
Holy.
And so, and I was like, this is just bizarre. It was just the whole time in Iraq. And so all I did was I read history. I guess the statute of limitations has passed somewhat. I used to get some whiskey from the Christian kids that would come around, you know, and the Kurdish people would help you get a little bit of scotch.
Yeah.
We drank Clan MacGregor when we could, you know, totally, you know, against army regulation. But, hey, I would try to get my hands on a little bit of scotch and survive combat, just survive, like read. It was in the ancient city of Nineveh, which is Mosul. And mm-hmm. I got to see Nimrod's palace.
Whoa, that's neat.
Left of it, right? And supposedly the site of the Tower of Babel, which was really interesting because as I got to be a better researcher and amateur historian, start looking into the connection between like the Tower of Babel and Nimrod. And like, you know, you look at the modern banking houses, like the Rothschilds, they believe that they're the descendants of Nimrod. I don't know if you knew that.
Mm.
And so that's like the first So Nimrod in, you know, in northern Iraq, I believe part of like the Assyrian type empire time frame. And they believe like the Tower of Babel is the story in the Bible, you know, where they start building this massive edifice and, you know, God destroys it and then like breaks up the ability for people to communicate with one tongue. So like one world government, one language, one thing. So they've always been trying to go back to that. And
that makes sense.
Right. So like they want to go back to that. At least that's the perception I get from, you know, the New World Order. We can talk about that and like the players that at least have been written about. I'm sure there's people that we don't even know about, but that seems to be the consolidation game of the New World Order. And it's interesting that I lived through that because a lot of people, you know, my time in combat was just a lot of like field work and, you know, patrols and, you know, I got shot at, you do all that stuff, but it, you know, I have all my limbs.
Right.
I'm very fortunate. I could have get hit with, you know, many people I knew got hit with IEDs and, you know, sniper fire. Luckily there's a lot of bad shots in Iraq. So I made it home okay. And, got to do what we're doing now. So I'm really thankful for my, having served with the warrior class, with some of the best people on the planet. They love freedom. They love the country. They love what America was and could be.
Yeah.
This is not a good time to join the military. I have a son who is 16, wants to be a Marine. And I say, son, I'll support you. You're going to have to get this new abomination of a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do that? And also, I mean, this is not the same country, not the same military. So proud of how I got to serve with the warrior class. But you will always find me a skeptic on foreign wars and the war criminals who cheerlead them.
And I think any true warrior should be skeptical of wars. It's as Yoda says, wars does not make one great, you know. If you know the cost and you know that this isn't just some, oh, we just pop in real quick and mop up the floor and then we jet out. Like, you know, the real costs of war, you understand what actually is happening there. So yeah, I would say that the people that have a deep understanding of what war really is are probably the least enthusiastic to participate in it. So, I think it's the guys that are like, yeah, man, like send me in, I'll go in there. Well, go in there. And then let's see, let's talk after you've been in there for a couple of months and you see the realities of it. I'm curious, did you ever, like, you have an interest in history and a deep understanding of, you know, some of these really important books that have been written in the past. We hear stories of when America went into Iraq, one of the first things they did was secure the museums. And yes. Did you ever have any sort of interaction or hear any stories that you could sort of confirm about our interest in what I would consider to be, like, on the, at least on a surface level, not strategic locations necessarily, not militarily strategic locations, but we went in there and we got access to some artifacts and that seemed to be a priority. And that always made me think there was something fishy. What do you know about that?
Jim Mars talked extensively about this. And I remember, you know, there was the lead invasion and that's like you had the first Marine Division, I believe, and then some army units. And that was like the first people to reach Baghdad where the museums were. And by the time I rolled through, they had secured that area. But you were absolutely right that so many of the artifacts, the relics, especially even in Nineveh, because you had like this ancient city, ancient ruins. And I know that they had people looking for things and like, it's almost like Raiders of the Lost Ark. They did have that. As a matter of fact, I like to write, but I'm not a good fiction writer. I found that out. Like, I'm not like a novel. I like to write op-eds and things. So in my early 20s, while I was there in Iraq, I started sketching out like kind of a novel that Jim Mars would later, as I learned who Jim Mars was kind of thinking the same thing, that there were other aspects to the invasion of Iraq and our interests, not just in the supposed weapons of mass destruction that obviously we gave right. them a bunch, but they weren't there. Was, you know, other, like the Philosopher's Stone, like you've heard some, like the, what do they call that? The type of gold that they would
monatomic gold,
monatomic, yes. Yeah. And so I've heard that and read that in other books about what may have been housed in the Baghdad and other museums. And Mosul was a big dig site. You know, that's the city in the Bible where, you know, Jonah, that God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh and preach. You know, and he keeps running away, and finally, like he gets swallowed up by a great fish or a whale. You know, so mm-hmm. Jonah and the whale. So I wrote my grandmother back at that time, and I said, I now see, Meemaw, I see why Jonah didn't want to go to Nineveh. It was not a great place, and right there on the Tigris River, and you know, it can be really pretty, and I found that a lot of the people, I felt bad for them. You know, you had like it's a big mix of the Kurds right there on that borderline of Kurdistan, what should be Kurdistan. And then you have, you know, the Arab folks. And it was a lot of poverty and a lot of history. It's a shame, right? Because there's so much there to learn from. And we're trying to, you know, build it into a democracy, Charlie.
Yeah. I'm sure that's exactly what they're asking for. How about food and water first? Right. We can start with that.
Yeah. How about that? How about food and water? And, you know, it was really sad. You go and you look back in the 1960s, they had amusement parks. And I would drive, it'd be like this, like you're in a weird post-apocalyptic movie. Mm-hmm. You're driving through, like you're in your Humvee, got your gunner up top, and you're driving through like what used to be, like there's a roller coaster next to you and all these old, like, they look like, yeah, it's really bizarre. Like, you know, all these old rides because the oil companies were in there, you know, pre-Saddam. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, Western oil companies, they'd have, you know, places for all the oil company workers and their kids to go. And
yeah,
I mean, it's just a lot. There's a lot of history there that we don't get into. But yeah, those really feel bad for those people. You get an up close view of how war actually works and how it smells. And what it does to people, and you will be very skeptical about getting inside. If you have a soul. Now there are some sociopaths, especially like the approved conservative veteran. I put that in quotations. You'll see people like Dan Crenshaw of Texas, you know, and he wants, hey, we got to fight him over there. So we're going to have to fight him over here. Probably not just the dumbest statement in politics, but we have to fight him over there, so we have to fight him over here, might be the dumbest statement ever uttered.
Yeah. It's geographically
right up there.
Misguided. It's ridiculous. It sounds like a sales pitch, you know, to get us enthusiastic about the war. When all this was happening, you know, when 9/11 happened, I didn't know what was going on. The Osama bin Laden story sound fishy to me, but I didn't know the ins and outs of geopolitics. The Iraq conversation never made sense. That to me was, it seems like we want to go to war with them. We're trying to come up with all these justifications. We've got Colin Powell out there talking about aluminum tubes and yellow cake uranium. Yeah. It just seemed a bit much to me. So I didn't really still at the time know the ins and outs of it. But even somebody on the on the outside could. Had questions about it. And then years later, you start to dig into 9/11. And I wonder about, like, you were awake to what's going on in the insanity of wars. And you had questions about this and you had big questions about Iraq. And I wondered, like, were you getting the anti-vax treatment there? From other people, were you getting the Goebbels saying, you know, it's easy. You just label some segment dangerous for their lack of patriotism and, you know, let society kind of work on them. Did the rest of the team view your viewpoint as something that could be a liability to them?
No, I had a great group of guys and gals too. And I never had any issues with my politics. It's like I think of Gore Vidal. You know, he talked about his service in World War II, and he would get really mad and say, "I never heard anyone say one patriotic thing." You know, and that's the way people were just there to be a part of the warrior class. Like there wasn't much politics. Like every once in a while, there's a douche who like thinks the talking like the talking points are real. You know, like, right. Nobody really believes that. Like we're just you're just grinding through it. You're just trying not to get killed. You don't want to die in this godforsaken place. You know, you want to help the person next to you, make sure everybody's, you know, okay at the end of the day, you know, go live to fight another day. And that's, there's simplicity to war at the same time. You know, we go back, it's very confusing to be a civilian after that. Because you're like, well, there's so many different things stressing me out that shouldn't. And there's no, all the simplicity's gone. Like, you could just celebrate not dying, you know, being in the army and in combat. You can just say, hey, I didn't die. You know, I got, I can sit down here and grab my book. I can have a conversation, you know, we'll just pass the time until tomorrow and it starts all over again. But I made it, you know, mm-hmm. Got something to show for your work, you know,
yeah.
But I think it's a little bit harder in civilian life, but no, I, there was never any issues there. And I was very clear about hating everything that was the Iraq War and making fun of it. I'd say I had a bit of a temper in my early 20s, late teens. Yeah. And so I would, my displeasure was known often every day about that war. And, it's a really sad, our country, allowing those psychopaths to put us on that trajectory. It really doesn't have a lot of parallels in history. Yeah. And you think now, gosh, Charlie, they wouldn't even ask now. There wouldn't be a debate. We just go to war. Like if we can summon the resources, like who's going to stop them? Congress? You know, like the Supreme Court? Like nobody's going to stop them. It's a complete takeover by the military-industrial complex. And so, and by the way, that's what, you know, the octopus of global control, as we're going to talk about, the main, its main food is fiat currency.
Yeah.
And so is the military-industrial complex. And that's what got me into gold and silver. Was the not only the historical ties, which I find fun, but the fact that when you get to expose people to the history of the monetary system and the great, I mean, it's literally economic alchemy. Like it's ingenious what they've pulled off.
Oh, yeah.
But evil. I mean, just an evil genius.
Everything you have to respect tracks that back level. To it. The evilness there, you have to respect the game there because they have created a system that it's the fiat currency system is so insane. And you know, it's funny because the combination that when Berwick and I wrote Controlled Demolition, I was writing about the history of coin clipping. And for people that don't know what this is like this blew my mind because back in the Roman days, we're talking about the collapse of empire and how it follows a very predictable cycle. And one of the things that happened at the end of the Roman era was that they had these coins, silver coins, I think might have been gold as well. And they were having a problem because they had expanded their empire too much. They had limited resources, but they needed more resources. So they were taking their coins and clipping little pie-shaped slices off of the edge all the way around these coins. Taking all those pieces together, it might take several coins in order to get enough together. Then taking all those little scrap pieces, melting them down and making a new coin. And I thought, holy shit, they're debasing the currency. They taught the Federal Reserve how to debase the currency. The Romans taught them how to do it. You know, so we're doing this virtual coin clipping now with debasing the money supply and going, oh, isn't this great? We've got more money. And it's like, that eventually blows up on you. So to see that and like, and realize that like, I'm thinking we invented fraud and manipulating the money supply. And then I'm going, no, this is as old as empire.
Yeah, just you can look at the rise and fall of any empire. There's no exception. And they rise on sound money and economic output, and they decline on fiat currency and, of course, importations and consumerism. Mm-hmm. Just every empire.
Everyone. Yeah, they do.
Voltaire said it best. You know, the philosopher Voltaire said, paper currency always returns to its original value, which is zero. It's the paper that's on. And I mean, look, that's the root of all the problems that we're going through right now. is the fiat currency central banking system, the international banking cartels. And when you figure that out, because people ask, I have a gold and silver shop, and people come in and they ask me, you know, how much money am I going to make if I buy gold and silver? And I'm like, well, gold and silver are money. And we I can do like a, you know, a 2 or 3 minute elevator speech on like, this is how we got here. This is what, and I actually brought some, and I'll explain this. So I brought some props on today, Charlie. I'll have to bring this to the camera. But I'll have this Krugerrand. I have a 1 ounce gold Krugerrand. We'll let that serve, and I'll walk the audience through, because I'm a podcast listener. I don't always catch your video like on Rockfin.
Right.
So this is a 1 ounce gold Krugerrand, and this is South African. But let this represent a $20 gold piece from the United States. So it's like from 1776 or so, by the time after we formed the government, a $20 gold piece in the United States was roughly 1 ounce of gold. It's actually 0.9675 ounces of gold. And then you had a silver dollar. This is a Morgan silver dollar from 1879. I actually carry this around with me. This was 100 years old when I was born. And I love the old, you know, silver dollars. Yeah. So it would take, you know, 20 of these to make one $20 gold piece, which was an ounce of gold. So in the simplest terms, you look at a $20 gold piece, ounce of gold. That's roughly, let's call it $2,000 today, okay? Just add a little premium in. Let's just round it up. So let's say it's $2,000 in gold, meltable gold that's in that. Well, the gold still buys the same amount of land, the same amount of oil, the same amount of clothing, the same amount of food that it did when a $20 gold piece was an ounce of gold, which was basically 1776 or so to 1933. But what happened to the $20? See, that's where you start. What happened to the $20 still exists, but in order for it to buy the same things that the gold would buy today, still, you have to have what? So $20 has to be turned into $2,000,
right?
And that's the loss, you know, in our currency. And one of the big opportunities right now, as you understand that, and because you look at Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. He interrupted an episode of Bonanza on August 15th.
How dare he?
Well, the weird thing about that is Bonanza is a show about people going out west in search of gold and silver. And I always thought, like, I can't be the only one that picked up on that. But, like, you know, he interrupted an episode of Bonanza, which was huge back then. And they said, we're going to temporarily close the gold window. And from that, from 71 back to 44, and I know I'm jumping around a bit here, but I'll tie this up real nicely. Bretton Woods is 1944. This is where the Allies knew basically that Hitler's finished, Japan's finished, you know, they're going to start their new world order. Mm-hmm. So they decide that gold, you know, will be set as the standard, and it's $35 an ounce. Well, that lasts from 1944 to 1971. And so you look at the dollar, you know, Nixon took us off the gold standard. Well, people will look at that, Charlie, and they'll say, well, look how much gold has gone up. And I say, no, your dollar went down.
Right.
Your fact, that's the fallacy. That's the paradigm they don't teach in school. And by the way, the financial networks are never going to talk about this. I mean, their lifeblood is the casino stock market and fiat currency. So they're never going to let a true, like, conspiracy gold guy go on like me, where it started just wrecking the Federal Reserve as an actual criminal cartel. They're not going to allow that. So you look at, you know, 71, $35 an ounce for gold. I actually, before we started recording, I looked and it was 1776. So 1,776 Luciferian bankster notes make 1 ounce of gold bullion on the global spot market. So what you have to understand about those two dates, 1933 and 1971, officially our money, our dollar, which isn't really money, it's currency, was taken away from the gold. Now, it was still in name, it was, but you couldn't legally own it. When Franklin Roosevelt said, turn in your gold in 1933, He allowed for certain collectibles. He allowed for people that worked in dentistry, jewelers. Those people could have gold. It wasn't like it was fentanyl or cocaine or right. something. Like, you could still use it, but he didn't want anybody competing with his bankster friends. You know, most of the gold that was turned in went to the Federal Reserve and then to the Bank of International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland. Mm-hmm. It was a big, you know, heist. You know, it was one of the biggest, I might be the biggest heist of all times prior to COVID. There's this big transfer of wealth. And so people, you know, American people, oh, I'm going to help out. It's for a banking crisis. We'll turn it all in. So, you know, then he immediately raises the price of gold for his bankster buddies. And they utilize that fiat dollar because then it becomes fiat, right? So that's why by 71, Nixon knew that the countries around the world were onto our scheme. When you start talking about coin clipping, what happened in 1965? That's when we started taking the silver out of the coinage, the, you know, dimes, the half dollars, the dollars and quarters. So that, you know, before 65, those were silver. Matter of fact, I just bought a bunch yesterday. Had a guy, you know, he was a Iraq war vet and saved up and had all his money in silver savings. And, but those like a quarter's $5 worth of silver, basically, you know, give or take.
Right.
So they retained their value. So the currency started to lose value. Nixon knew it. He knew that the countries, these other countries were hip to what we were doing. And so he closed the gold window because we really didn't have the gold to pay them and we were running deficits. So now that's back when we even had like fiscal somewhat like even the perception of fiscal responsibility. We don't pretend even try it now.
There's no even pretense to it. It's like we're just spending whatever we want whenever we want to. We just ask the Fed and they give us more, and now BlackRock is involved, and you know,
right. it's just off the everything's off the rails, and it's we're headed to a place you can't reverse it now. When they talk about the Fed is going to start maybe start tapering, you know, you hear that term coming out, and I'm like, okay, you'll stop the massive amount of printing. And then they're like, well, maybe we'll raise rates in 2022, and then the market just starts having a seizure. And I'm thinking, guys, you have built this house of cards, and there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. It's done. Fiat currency. This whole system, when they tell you they're going to do a great reset, pay attention, ladies and gentlemen. They're doing it, but they know what's coming. So basically, they're picking winners and losers using the lockdowns and all this psychological warfare to their own ends. Mm-hmm. Because they're going to be, you know, the golden rule is he who has the gold makes the rules, right? So they are planning this. Look, I use your term all the time, the controlled demolition. That's exactly what's going on. So they want you in the stock market. They want you in the casino. They don't want you paying attention to what's happening to the dollar. But the dollar is gone. I mean, it'll be around for a little while. They're going to digitize it. They want to create expiration dates on the currency. And also, maybe you're a Christian conservative. Maybe you don't believe in the vax, right? Well, you might be at that time. You're a terrorist in the new world order. You're a terrorist in the new government, right? Yep. And they're going to limit what you could spend with that digital currency. That's the plan anyway, right? Yeah. It's part of the Great Reset. So they're telling you what they're going to do. They're talking about the Fed coin. What can you do? Well, this is why I'm in the business that I'm in, because I tell people, look, there's opportunities in metals. One, because gold and silver have always been money. They house value. They represent work. You have to go find them. You have to dig in the earth. You have to raise capital to get them. You have to put, you know, there's machinery at use, all this stuff. Plus, you got the medical benefits of things like silver. You know, I have a 1 ounce silver bullion coin that I put in my water filter in my cabin. Like mm-hmm. I put it in the top part of the gravity fed because, mm-hmm. you know, that's how you make, basically it's a very, you know, level one way of making colloidal silver. Huh. Silver is used in medicines, used in antibacterial, like the gels that they use for like really infectious diseases. Silver is having a big time in the medical industry right now, and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. They used to put, you know, this is a silver dollar from the 1870s. They used to put this in the milk on long wagon rides, you know, because silver would preserve it.
Really?
Silver has healing. It's not just for killing vampires. It has healing properties and medicinal properties that I'm a big fan of, but also thermoconductive. It's the most thermoconductive metal. It's used in electronics, solar. That's huge for the future. Same thing with gold, with electronics. Gold is also used in medicine. So many, many, many uses. It's undervalued. As we careen, I know it's funny because our conversations, and we've been on America Unplugged before, but it's like we go around kind of this, we're in our organic conversation. We're going to talk about gold and silver. We talked about foreign policy, but all of it ties together.
Yeah, of course.
We're entering a new era, and this is where we have to be prepared. And I'm not somebody that's a fear monger, but I don't believe that the current system as we know it is going to last much longer.
Yeah.
There will be a catastrophic and catalyzing event of some kind financially, okay, ladies and gentlemen? That's where we are. And I just tell people, look, as you're preparing for the future, consider metals. And I'm not giving you investment advice. I don't do that. I don't even really know if I could classify these things as an investment per se. They just are safety, you know, in a time of uncertainty. And to give you, I brought these props on for a reason, but to give you an example of something wrong with the valuation of metals, Charlie, I think I'm the only one that puts it this way, so I try to make it really simple. But people always ask me about silver. And I said, where's silver going to go? You know, why is it hover in the 20s at like its highs? Like, what's wrong with it? Well, gold is manipulated by the big central banks, but so is silver. And they keep it low for their components, for their solar, for their electric cars. There's like 2 kilograms of silver in each electric car alone.
Wow.
So there's a lot that the big play, especially like JP Morgan, you know, they own I think they're the largest silver owner now.
Yeah.
And
they
did that quietly. Well, back in the 70s and early 80s, it was the Hunt brothers.
Yes.
And they cornered the silver market. They drove silver to $50 an ounce in 1980. Well, $50 in 1980, Charlie, is like $200 today.
Yeah.
So silver has never really recovered from that. Because people say, oh, you can't really corner the silver market. Oh, that was a stupid play. You know, you had Buffett a little while in the 90s. He played with it. But really, the big boys took it over. Well, they just keep everything quiet. And if you pay attention, they're buying it. Because I can see, like my back office, I'm tied to the trading floor in Dallas. I can see what's available, what's limited by the mint production. Like what's the lead time on getting, you know, 1,000 ounces? Well, it changes, especially when the market dips, because nobody's selling right now. Like as we're doing this broadcast, I think silver is just under $23, which is extremely cheap. So let me just break this down real quick. So let's just go back and out. Like I used this Krugerrand to represent a $20 gold piece in 1933. It was just an ounce of gold, right? This is an ounce of gold. Used to, it would take 20 of these silver dollars, which are not quite an ounce of silver, but it would take 20 silver dollars, roughly this tube of silver eagles, to make 1 ounce of gold. Well, that, like I said, the gold buys the same amount that it did of commodities that it did in 1933, right? And we talked about that. So the dollar lost value, gold kept its value. What happened to silver though, Charlie? Because now it takes 1, 2, 3, it takes 60 of those 1 ounce silver rounds. And actually, a little bit more, because it's not quite an ounce of silver, to make that ounce of gold. What happened? And that is I think a real-time example of, there's an analogy of the beach ball being held underwater for so long, and all of a sudden you let it go and it just flies to the surface, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's silver, in my opinion. I think gold has a lot of upside. It's portable. It's recognizable, especially Krugerrands. If you got a little bit of wealth, you know, you can throw them in some 1 ounce Krugerrands, put them in a backpack, put them in a hidden compartment, and you can travel, you know. Silver's a lot more bulky. As I showed you, it takes 60 of these bad boys to make 1 ounce of gold, at least in the silver dollar price range. So I think that's the upside. I think there's been a massive manipulation in silver. So I tell people that call me, hey, let's talk about silver. Especially if you have, you know, if you have 10,000, you want to put in the market for metals, make sure they're physical metals in your hands.
Yes.
Don't get numismatics. You're going to be talked to about numismatics. You call an, like a major, gold dealer. I won't name names, but you call most of the time, they're going to have somebody in a call center wanting to put you in some sort of graded slabbed. Nothing wrong with those, but those are not what you want, especially if you're trying to get match metal for dollar. You know, you're trading your fiat currency. You want the most metals. So I think silver has a huge upside. It's portable. It's divisible. And I think the both of them great hedges against what's coming. But I wanted to, that the last time I did that presentation, I was hosting for Owen Schroyer on InfoWars. It's been a little while, but yeah. I thought just the representation of what, and that really gets, look, I didn't say I know why that, you know, for a fact, why that's, it takes so much more silver to make the value of gold. But we got to think 1776 to 1933.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty long time for those things to be stable by metal standards, yeah. The bimetallic standard. Something happened, and it has to do with the central bank. It has to do with fiat currency. And when you know things like that, especially going in, it's just something to think about, something for your listeners.
I love silver. I've been buying silver for years. I think I might be predisposed to it. My dad, who passed away years ago, I know that he was into gold and silver. So maybe I don't know, maybe I just, as a kid, I heard about that. Then you start to read about COMEX and the Forex and all these marketplaces, these marketplaces that have been rigged by the big banks, and they've been found guilty and paid billions of dollars in fines. And you go, hang on a second, they're manipulating the price. They're keeping this price artificially low. We see like silver starts to rise, and then a bunch of short contracts go into the market, and then boom, it's all of a sudden it starts to go back down again. And you go, these guys are messing with this, but they can't do it forever, can they? I mean, at some point, you get the beach ball analogy where it gets exposed and goes through the roof. I know guys like Cliff High are talking about insane prices for silver. I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't understand the mechanics of that. I just know this. I know that I look at it like I've got fiat currency dollar bills that I know there's a ticking clock on. Their value is diminishing the longer I hold on to them. I don't want to exchange them for central bank digital currencies, because talk about an expiration date. That expiration date will happen a whole lot faster. So I'm not interested in that. I could take a bunch of cash and put it in my mattress, which might not be a bad idea for the short term if you need to, you know, some sort of horrible situation goes down and you have to have cash. Having it in your mattress is probably infinitely better than having it in your bank account, which they have, which you are an unsecured creditor on. So I don't love the bank account thing. I see gold and I see silver in particular as me just exchanging fiat currency for something else. I'll give you this, and then you give me that. And my bet is that this, even though it's being manipulated, my silver coin in the long run will be worth more, or at the bare minimum will just maybe retain its value a little bit longer than the dollar. So I think that people should be thinking about these things. I think they should be thinking about what they're going to do. And I'm like you, I'm not licensed to give investment advice. I'm not giving investment advice. People do whatever you want to do. But I've been really interested in having a gold and silver connection, you know? And so to have you as that connection and what you guys are doing and what you're bringing to my listeners, I appreciate, because I've been talking about it for a while, but I haven't been able to say, go talk to this guy because I know them and I trust them. I've just been saying, like, I buy my stuff at SD Bullion, have for years and years, but I don't know them. I order it and they send it to me and that's good. Am I getting the best price possible? I don't really know. So when you and I started talking a couple months ago, talking about this whole thing, I was like, I'd really like for you to be part of this so that at least I can say to the listeners, I don't know it all about gold and silver, but I know some guy that knows a whole lot more and I trust him and I trust his business. So if you're interested in buying gold or silver, or this other component that you have that I want you to talk about that I think is really important, that is your ability to convert IRAs?
Yes. Yeah? Yeah, we're one of the only small shops that I know that does that. We've got a partner out in Nevada called New Direction Trust, and they handle all the legal. So basically, you get all your metals from me. And if you roll over, you could roll over a 401k. I just had a lady do that. Roll over IRAs all the time. You go into traditional IRA and you can roll into physical metal, physical gold and silver bullion, and it's stored in a third party vault. You get to pick, I think there's like 8 different vaults that I know of, some in Nevada, some in Texas, some in Delaware. They're all over the country. And I set up my business, Charlie, I set it up to be really lean and mean. I use my connections with the gold and silver trading floor in Dallas. They don't deal with the public. They only deal with people like me that are dealing. You have to be recommended to get in there. And I've kept every account of every, I always pay every bill, every invoice on time. So I have a good reputation there. So I can get any amount of gold and silver I want locked in. I can call the trading floor right now and say, I want $1 million in gold bullion, and the price stops. They stop the price. The problem is I have to pay for it. So no matter if I order it, the invoice has to be satisfied. So I've got this connection to the trading floor, which helps my customers out on pricing. It's not all, I'm in Branson, Missouri. I deal with Dallas. So it's not like you can come in my shop and say, I want 20 American Gold Eagles today. I'm like, well, you can order them. You can trade with me, and then I'm going to have them drop shipped either to you or here. You can pick them up. We don't carry a lot of inventory in house. I do get things. We stock up on, like yesterday, I bought $500 face value of silver quarters. So, do the math on that. That's what, the 4 quarters would be, $20 basically, in retail. That kind of stuff comes in, which is good deals for people that call me or walk in. But I have a toll-free number. It goes direct to my cell phone. If you go to my website, wisewolf.gold, or actually macroaggressions.gold, we'll take you to that. We're working on that landing page. When you go to the website, you'll see that there's not a place where you can go like click on an order. That's going to come later. That's a lot of back off. You realize that the prices would have to be like a set in an algorithm. You'd have to constantly change them. So I say, give me a call or a text. Start off the relationship that way. You're going to know your dealer. You're going to know your gold dealer, and you're going to talk to me. It's not a robot. Sometimes my wife works up here, but it's usually just me and my dogs. And I work 7 days a week if I need to. I take orders, make sure all the orders are fulfilled. It's what I do. It's how I stay on the radio. It's how I get to do podcasts with people like you and get our message out there. Is the shop. So, yeah, just it's. Rolling over IRAs is something that we do. We also ship physical metals anywhere in the country. If you call me up and say, hey, Tony, I got $500. Where do I start? No problem. There's no minimum. And I know that you and I talked off air. One thing I wanted to offer your listeners exclusively, and we're just doing this as a pilot program. And it's good. A shout out to my friend Russ, who owns the UPS store here in Branson. He listens to your show, by the way.
Nice.
Big fan.
Thank you, Russ.
He did that long before me, by the way. I walked in one day. He'll love this podcast. I walked in and I was wearing a InfoWars shirt, and he was like, "Hey, that's cool. I like your shirt." And I'm like, "Yeah, I host on InfoWars sometimes." And he's like, "What?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I host. I'm going tomorrow to host for David Knight. That was last year, so we got to be really good friends. So I got a good connection on where we send out product and getting some deals on shipping rates. So we're going to beta test this. Again, I'm small business. Sometimes I like SD Bullion. I like JM Bullion. It's a good place to cross check my products, like to see, am I being reasonable? I just go by what the trading floor has. I have a built-in, I don't think this is unreasonable, but I try to make between $1.50 and $2 an ounce on silver. I don't think that's unreasonable. That's a pretty low margin. Same gold, I try to make $50 an ounce. If I can make $50 an ounce and I don't, and my only expense on that top of that is shipping, then it's fine. We're all about relationships. Every person that I deal with, my name, my brand, Wise Wolf, I would die for that brand. And all the relationships I've made, like people like you and Don Jeffries and the great Billy Ray Valentine, you guys know that everything I do, everything I say, I mean. And if there's something wrong, I'm going to fix it. And that's the deal about dealing with somebody in on a personal level for your metals, especially in this time. Yes, I can't always guarantee that it's going to be the lowest possible price and I'll beat JM Bullion and all this. Guys, I won't. But what I will have is the ability to tell you when new things come in or maybe the perfect deal for you. And guess what? You're always going to get your product. You can go find my ratings. They're all 5-star. And those are all real people. The only negative review I ever got, Charlie, was from another gold dealer who never did business with me. They just wanted to pull my score down. And my wife had to call them. And because I said, I'm just going to go over there. We're going to fix it. And she said, no. So my wife was my combat medic in the Army. And she called and had that taken down. So you'll find that we're 5-star rated for a reason. I love my customers. And this is, you know, I sponsor Donald Jeffries, the Donald Jeffries Show. Love Don. Love his work.
Too. He's great.
Amazing guy. I can't believe I get to do a show with him. It's really weird.
It's great. He's phenomenal. The first time I heard Don Jeffries, and he's been on this show before too. The first time I heard Don, I was like, I like this guy. I like this guy's energy. I don't love his microphone. His microphone was cutting out a bit, but I was like, but he's on it. He's been doing it for, God, I mean, he's been doing it since well before I was even thinking about this sort of stuff. Yeah. And what you guys are doing with America Unplugged is fantastic. That's over there on Rockfin. We've got, so you've built a landing page specifically for this audience.
Yes. Macroaggressions.gold.
This is your website, people. Go to www.macroaggressions.gold. And if you go there, that's the connection to get straight to Tony. And what you're going to do is you're going to then take a look at the website, probably give you a call and say, I'm interested in converting my 401k. I'm interested in my IRA. I'm interested in this is how much money I've got. What do you think? You know, I think that people are going to appreciate, especially if they don't know the ins and outs of gold and silver, appreciate having the ability to talk to someone that does, that they don't feel is going to cheat them, or, you know, you're as upfront as you can possibly be with this. Talking about your margins, talking about who you are, talking about where to find you. I mean, you're not like one and done. You plan to be around for a very long time.
Yes.
You've got a background that just screams integrity, and we all know the same people. So it's not like, you know, I mean, there's nobody saying anything bad about Tony out there. Okay. This is why we're doing it. And I wanted this relationship, not just with this silver, obviously I wanted a relationship with you is extremely important, but to have this, I'm very protective, I guess, of the audience. I mean, I never really thought of it until recently. Like, I want to make sure that I'm giving them the things that make sense to them. And so this makes all the sense in the world. Let's wrap up with this real quick. Since you do a show about crypto as well, and I know that we have a lot of, I mean, this audience skews a little bit younger. What are your thoughts on crypto? Where are we right now?
I think we're in a great place for crypto. There's a war going on. It's the entire corrupt banking cartels against all of us, you know, they're trying to take away our ability to have sovereignty, like in things like Bitcoin. I'm a big fan of Bitcoin. I bought my first Bitcoin ATM in 2016. And my brother actually took that, my little brother, Andrew, and he did a magnificent job. He's got a company called Tao Bitcoin, which it means the Arterburn organization, T-A-O, but Tao means the way. And he's got a Tao Bitcoin, and he's got Bitcoins all over the country. Bitcoin ATMs. And I own a few. I've been a fan of Bitcoin. I was buying Bitcoin at $300 and something. Charlie, I didn't keep it. I used it to service my ATMs. Had I just kept the Bitcoin, I think I'd have like a couple of mil. That would have been great, but I wouldn't have learned anything. So I've used the Bitcoin to, you know, my customers got to get Bitcoin, and I get to replace it every time they bought some. I have a Bitcoin ATM here in my shop. I will accept crypto. For those of you who follow the Dollar Vigilante, I do too. And Jeff Berwick, I love Pirate Chain. We can do business. If Monero, we can do business. Nice. So I'm all about crypto. I know it's funny. We didn't even get to talk about that. I was so focused on gold. But I think gold and silver right now are important to have something physical. But in the realm of crypto, Bitcoin being adopted by El Salvador, I thought was a great piece of news for all of us who care about human liberty and freedom of movement and getting away from these satanic currencies. I mean, it's really what they are. Yeah. Let's not mince words anymore. We're not on CNBC. We can actually talk about the truth when it comes to finances. So no, I'm all about crypto. And I will, if somebody has questions on crypto, if I can find out, I'll help you. I mean, if you call me and say, I want to buy $100,000 in Bitcoin, I can probably make that happen. If you want to buy a little bit less, I'll just direct you to one of my ATMs, or I'll tell you if you probably can go to Cash App too, if you want to buy a little bit. But we deal with all that. So we're set up for that, as a matter of fact.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I had Michael Cobb on the show. He's the head of ECI Development. They're a real estate development company, but I met them at Anarchapulco through Jeff, and they're building. They got acquired the land. They're building on Bitcoin Beach in El Salvador, and they are accepting Bitcoin, and they're accepting all kinds of crypto for their projects in Belize, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and Panama. So as they expand into El Salvador, they're working on that. They're doing a development deal with Jeff in Mexico, and they'll be accepting crypto there. It's becoming more, it's becoming adopted by these people, El Salvador. Now we start to hear some other countries kicking the tires on this. This could be a global revolution. Just if nothing else, just reimagining the way our relationship with currencies, our relationship with money, what we think about them, how we envision them, that we take these U.S. dollar Federal Reserve notes, not even U.S. dollars, and we inject our energy into it, and we work all day for it, and for what? It's very satanic, mentioned.
They can devalue it the next day.
Yeah, there's a magic spell attached to it, and so it's hard to kind of wrap your head around. But I think the first step for people that are, and I mean the people that are listening to this show, they're into weird stuff, so they're into alternative things and alternative thinking. And I never really thought of gold and silver as being alternatives, really, because you see it everywhere. You're everybody knows what it is, and yet it is treated like it isn't like it is. Like, oh, that's not real. That's not money. This is only money. This paper stuff that we print up and that we digitally create. That's the only thing that's money. All that other stuff is hocus pocus. Well, okay. The people telling you that for your entire life have now been exposed as the pathological liars that are behind kicking off all these wars and starting this COVID operation. So it's like, really, are you going to trust them what they tell you about the currency, or should we be proactive in our transition? You don't want to be reactive. Like, you don't want to be the last guy in the world to figure out about Bitcoin and gold and silver, right? You kind of, there's that saying that in by the snarky Bitcoin people, like, you get Bitcoin at the price you deserve to pay for it, right? It meaning like the way you sort of wake up to this, the sooner you wake up, you get it cheaper. But to change your relationship with money, currency, and incorporate things like gold and silver, physical gold and silver into this, getting creative about the way you treat your 401k and IRA, that, a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm kind of trapped in this. Well, maybe you're not. I think you should probably wind up giving Tony a call, because he's got some ideas for you that you probably didn't know existed. He's got options there. Tony, you are such a huge asset to have in this fight for freedom. I appreciate your perspective as being somebody that was literally in the fight overseas, that could see it, that has that set of eyes, that can see it from that way, comes back here, understands what we're really fighting for. And it's not against, who we're fighting against. It's not 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters in Afghanistan caves. It's really a system that has been built up to keep us small and on the reservation and uneducated about how things really work. I appreciate your tenacity and your calmness, though, your ability to explain all this. It's just a great fit. It's a great fit. So I'm really happy to have you as a sponsor for Macroaggressions. This is going to go for a long, long time. I think if those of you out there that want to get an idea of what's going on, go to macroaggressions.gold, take a look for yourself, see if there's something that you like. My sales pitch, so to speak, with all of my sponsors is very, very hands off. It's take a look, read as much as you can on the website, see if it's a fit for you. If you like it, if you're in the market for these sorts of things, go ahead and pull the trigger. And that, of course, helps to support the show. Where can people find your radio work? I know you're doing outstanding things with America Unplugged on Rockfin, but give us where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm on like episode 348 of the Arterburn radio transmission. A couple episodes a week. You can find anywhere podcasts are found, type in Arterburn radio and you can usually find it. Arterburn.news is my website. There's a little tab on there. You can go and listen to past shows. We're planning on doing a little bit more with the radio show moving forward. Lot of new guests and content. We just had James Perloff on.
Oh, he's great.
Maybe we'll have Charlie Robinson on soon. Could you go live on WWCR? You know, just the spirit of Bill Cooper, you know, that we can.
Oh, I would be infused with the spirit of Bill Cooper. I'll take it. That'll work for me. Well, listen, everybody, if you like this episode, hopefully you did, take the additional step of sharing it with your friends and family, because the algorithm's going to see Tony's name and my stupid face, and they're going to go downvote for you guys. So, Tony, you're the best. Thank you so much for everything that you do and will continue to do. And if you can right now, rate the show too, by the way, and we will check all of you out next time. Thanks, everybody.